Programa especial, Plus Radio. Colin Kiffin.
Today is a special day because I have an in-studio guest, and his name is Colin Kiffin. Welcome.
Hey, John. Thanks so much.
All right. So Colin is a former Columbia recording artist, and you're a native Southern California, is that correct?
I am a native, born in Hollywood.
You're a rare breed. Tell me a little bit about your music and how it has fit into your life and how you have fit into it.
Well, basically, it ruined my life. I started playing surf music when I was like 13 or 14 years old, you know, the Ventures and all that kind of stuff. And
oh, yeah.
Just evolved from there. Of course, the Beatles and the British Invasion, Yardbirds, all those influences, Love and Spoonful later, and probably the Buffalo Springfield. And Neil Young, Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, all during that period were just very influential for me, and I flourished with that lyrical stuff and the melodic stuff.
So okay, you were deeply influenced by this melodic music, and it informed your own music as well, right? When did you start playing original stuff?
Well, probably 15 years old, we were making up our own songs, you know. Of course, we wanted to play everybody else. We wanted to play the Beatles. We played the Stones. We played James Brown. We played all that stuff. But some of my bandmates and I, we were thinking, well, yeah, it's great, but we don't want to be them. We want to be like them.
Right.
So we started writing stuff. It was silly stuff at first, but, you know.
Well, got to start somewhere, right?
That's right. That's right.
So let's you know, before we get too far, let's play a song of yours, and it's called We'll See.
Can I tell you a story first?
I was just going to ask if you would.
Yeah, well, you know, like a lot of inspirational songs, what did it come from? It comes from mostly love, breakups, falling in love, all that kind of stuff. Well, this was a breakup, and I was doing pretty well, had money in the bank and a nice two-story house, a lot of square footage, sitting upstairs with my wife laying in bed there on her way out the door, basically. You know, we were still sleeping in the same room. And I got up on a Sunday morning with the sun coming up, and I went over to this window that had a big bay window upstairs, and I sat on my desk, and this song just wrote itself, basically. And the chorus on the song is, "Baby, I'm ready. I'm not afraid of what might become of me. I've had a vision of what it will be. What will happen, we'll just have to see."
Cool. So let's listen to that song. Colin Kiffin is in the studio with me, and here is We'll See.
Somewhere there's a river trying to find the sea. Of how it will be, what'll happen, you'll just have to see. angry words and all of the love we both deserve. Yeah, we both deserve.
We'll see. That's Colin Kiffin, and Colin is in the studio with me. Anyway, we just listened to We'll See, and I love the sound of that song. It's got that 70s rock aesthetic, and I mean that in like the most complimentary way, because I love that genre, you know, and it's very well crafted and wonderful song. So tell me about recording that. Who's playing with you? And
well, you know. I tell you what, about 15 years ago, I got together with a guy named Jimmy Monahan, who was with the Chris Hillman band, Desert Rose, mm-hmm. who was a bass player for the Birds. He lives in Ventura, incidentally.
Yes.
Anyway, Jimmy Monahan plays left-handed guitar. I mean, I've played with a lot of guitar players through my career, and this guy is just phenomenal. I mean, country, rock, whatever you want. And so we got together with him. He liked my songs. I said, well, Jim, I just want a trio. You know, I need more bass and drums. So he ended up playing bass in my band.
All right.
And we called it Colin Kiffin and Sally's Legs. I don't know why. And Sally's Legs, it just popped into my head one night. You know, it was...
From the unending treasure trove of band names.
Yeah.
In the ether. That one fell down, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I don't know where I was going with this. Sally's Legs. Anyway, we started playing... And he was playing bass in the band, and we get for rehearsals, and we do some stuff here and there, and my life went in a different direction, and we split up, but I when I started playing again, you know, because I played pedal steel. I was one of the five, six guys in L.A. that, I mean, Buddy Evans left town, there was Red Rhodes, there was Dan Doug Moore, and he and I used to trade gigs. You know, I used to play the Palomino off and on, mm-hmm. pedal steel, and I took it up. When I was with Columbia Records, we brought in Red Rhodes to play steel on a couple of the tracks.
Oh, wow.
And I fell in love with it. And
you know, I am in love with that instrument as well. I think it's well beyond me because I can't, like, use all my limbs at once. But I love the sound of the pedal steel. It's one of those things.
It's magical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult. I mean, you use your both feet on pedals and volume, you know, use knees going in both directions, and it's 10 strings tuned to some crazy chord, and each time you move a pedal, it moves notes up or down.
Yeah, crazy.
But anyway, long story short, so, or a short story long, the band broke up, and I didn't play for literally 8 years or something. I picked it up again, started playing again, started writing again, and I said, man, you know, as a kid, I used to go down to studios in Hollywood Sound and some of the other studios and just go for a round, you know, just to learn stuff. And I was a pretty good engineer in analog at the time. I came back into it later, learned digital, bought some equipment that would have cost me $500,000 back in the analog day.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I could bring in this guy or that guy. I ended up doing everything. I programmed the freaking drums, played the bass, and some of my other tracks, a little more country. I've got the steel on it. So everything on this record except... No, everything, even the backgrounds on this, I did all myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
One-man band and one-stop shop, I guess.
Yeah, except I can't get along with the other players, you know? I mean, that guitar player, you know?
You know, it's like, tough battling your inner musicians.
I know. I feel like I'm in that, you know, Three Phases of Eve kind of thing when I do that.
Speaking of, you know, you were talking about your history of playing music in L.A., and so tell me about your... associations during the Columbia Records.
Yeah.
Tell me some of those.
Let me go back even before that. My high school band, and I think I was 17 because I started driving one of my bandmates around who didn't have his driver's license. And incidentally, I might mention his name's Pat Flynn.
And oh, yeah.
He's a heavy Nashville player. He's had Garth Brooks cover two of his songs. He's with a band, was on EMI. They did about six albums called New Grass Revival.
Right.
Leaving Baton Rouge. They had a bunch of hits. Well, he was always a fast player. He was always like playing the, what is it, the 33 RPM and 45. You know, I mean, he's just always just smoking. So he was in the band. And I brought him into the band with my two other friends. And he was playing guitar at the time. And he had a lot of folk origins, which lent itself very well to what we were doing. And a local record producer, his name was Dick Parker, or Wayne Parker, who was also an artist. He had a couple of country hits. Brought us in, and he knew Snuff Garrett at Liberty. And we went into Gold Star Studios, which was the studio in L.A., or one of the major ones in L.A. at the time. And we went in there and recorded a single. Let me transgress a bit, because here's four kids, you know, 16, 15, 16 and a half years old, and we go in and they start setting us up at Gold Star, and they start putting up the baffles, right? So we're putting our amps and stuff, the baffles in. I look down, and on the baffles, Stephen Stills, below that, Richie Furay, below that, Neil Young, and then somebody, Buffalo Springfield. And I said, you're not going to believe this, guys. Come over here, you know? And we were like the apes in front of the monolith on 2002. You know, I mean, it was like sacred freaking ground. And Rich Severson, the guitar player, now a great jazz guitar player here in L.A., said, Colin, come over here. It said, I think it said Caesar and Cleopatra. And then it was crossed out and it said Sonny and Cher. They recorded all their hits there with Phil Spector.
Wow, no kidding.
Anyway, so we sat down there, we recorded two sides, and it was released on a 45.
Yeah.
But they gave us a big box of 45s. And it was like a scene from the movie, That Thing You Do. They started playing it, and we were driving in our car, swerving off the road, jumping all over.
No kidding.
Yeah. And we went around to all the outlying stations in L.A., you know, literally Lompoc, El Centro, Palmdale. And we'd go in like a studio like this on the weekend when we were off. And they'd play our record, and we'd do a little interview, and then we'd get in the car and drive to the next station. And
wow.
it was absolutely amazing to do
that. Fine. What was the name of that band?
That was the California Grassfield.
The California Grassfield.
Yeah.
Well, folks, if you find the 45 from California Grassfield, it's worth a lot.
Well, I don't know. maybe a coaster or something. Well, anyway, we had some success with that, and the guitar player and the drummer decided they wanted to do jazz, and Pat and I were left alone as orphans, and we started playing, and we ran in a couple other guys, and he and I basically started this group, Fresh Air, and it was quite an amazing experience. We somehow got an audition from a friend of a friend at Studio Instrument Rentals, and the West Coast VP of Columbia, CBS, who was basically like Clive Davis on the West Coast, Jack Gold, was brought down by the producer that saw us somewhere. His name was Sonny Knight.
Uh-huh.
He was a DJ, hence the name. He produced the group called The Spiral Staircase, which had More Today Than Yesterday, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And all those hits for them.
Wow.
And so he brought Jack Gold down, and we sat down, and we started singing. We had 3-4-part harmony, you know, and it was kind of bread meets the Eagles before the Eagles kind of thing, you know.
Cool.
And he was impressed with the material, and we were signed, and we were in the CBS compound in L.A. recording.
Wow. No
and
kidding.
In Studio C was Rusty Young and Richie Furay. In fact, The Byrds with Clarence White was in Studio B. We were in A. And then we'd go up in the elevator, and Roger McGuinn was going up in the elevator with us, you know, from The Byrds. And then Sonny says, come here, Colin, come here, Pat, come on. Let's go over to studio such and such. And it goes over there, and Louis Shelton, who actually was a big session guitar player and produced Seals and Croft, had his guitar set up, and he was ripping on this solo, Tobacco Road. And Mark Lindsay was the artist, Mark Lindsay of Paul Revere and the Raiders. And he said, wait, one minute. And bingo, this beautiful ripping guitar part, right, on Tobacco Road. Dun, 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 you know. And I said, wow, man. And Lindsay turned to us, and he says, that was his first take.
Man.
So a bunch of experiences like that.
Yeah.
Were just, you couldn't make the stuff up.
What a career, whatever you want to say. It's like you're in there with all these amazing musicians and producers, and it must have been
Awesome.
It was awesome. In fact, at the time, you know, we were just a bunch of kids in our late teens, early 20s, and I don't think we fully appreciated it. We were in awe, but we couldn't actually appreciate how amazing that was. And we didn't have a drummer when we first started out in Fresh Air. So, you know who they happened to bring in to drum?
Oh,
Hal Blaine.
Yeah, one of the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was on a lot of stuff.
Yeah. He just came off the Paul Simon session. I forget what album it was. He brought his congas in, and he was jerking around in the studio. We hear this. What the heck is that? You know, they're miking him up. And I went out. Well, it was the same thing he used on Mrs. Robinson. Ba-ba-da-ba-da-da-da-boom. You know, you hear this. Yeah. And what it was, he was playing the conga, and he would wet his thumb real quick and slide it across the top of the conga, and it made that noise.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Who would have thought, right?
I want to play that song. I wonder if we have it. Yeah, that's the Birds, and So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, and I have Colin Kiffin in the studio with me, and we were talking about that song, I think, on the break, and you were pointing out Chris Hillman's bass playing on that. I never actually listened to that part of it, but man, he's moving.
It's just so inspired. You know, if you listen to it, you know, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and then he comes out of it on the choruses, you know, into a just a standard beat, and then back into it again. It kind of reminds me a little bit of 8 Miles High.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, Hillman, he's a great guitar player.
Oh, yeah.
Bluegrass player. I think he plays mandolin as well.
Yep.
Yeah. And what a fine singer he is. But, man, he did some iconic bass stuff on those Birds albums.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And talking about the Birds, one of the associations that you mentioned earlier was with Terry Melcher, who was part of that whole scene, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a big story. Terry Melcher is a huge story, you know. He was associated basically with the Beach Boys. He was the guy that Dennis Wilson was trying to introduce Charles Manson to. You know, there's a lot of mythology around Terry Melcher. Doris Day's son, right?
That's Doris Day's son,
yeah.
Right? I remember I got a call. We didn't have cell phones then. It was a call to the hotel, you know. He says, Colin, it's Bruce. Bruce who? You know? Well, Bruce Johnson. Oh, hey, Bruce, yep. What's he doing? He says, well, Terry and I had this time booked at Hyder tomorrow, and we'd sure like you to come down. Terry's doing his own album, Brentwood or something like that, or Beverly Hills. Because at that point, I'd sang some backgrounds and done some stuff with Terry with Fresh Air. And he says, why don't you come down and sing some harmony parts? So we ended up pulling up stakes and driving back to L.A. and went into Hyder. And I don't know whether we ever sang, actually. We just sat around telling stories. And I said, yeah. Well, great, guys. You know, you dragged me back from Las Vegas to do this. But backtrack a bit onto the Terry thing. After the album was released, they were trying to put us together with another producer. I don't know why. Maybe somebody a little hipper or into what we were doing more. And once again, an audition was set up by somebody that was kind of our friend, halfway managing us, and Terry Melcher, and none of us knew who he was, really, you know, and so he had something to do with the Birds, you know. Oh, really, mm-hmm. Really? So he came out to this little rental that I had out in Thousand Oaks, and the four of us were there, and we were in the living room, and we had our guitars, no drummer or anything at the time, and we started out with a song, acoustically, four-part harmony, Life's a Long Lonesome Highway, Love is Just a Lady on the Byway was the chorus. We sang the song, and Melcher just sat there, just looking straight ahead, you know. And he says, after we finished the song, he says, I don't need to hear any more. Let's do it. And that was it.
All right.
That was it. It was like kind of the genre he was into at that time. And anyway, we could segue on this.
So he ended up producing
some sides after the album was released. Never released these. Oh. We did four sides with Terry. Very interesting sessions. We didn't have a drummer at the time. Still, we booked, I think it was Hyder, and we went in and, oh, we did have a drummer, excuse me, Don Heffington, who played on some of the Fresh Air stuff and then was our drummer. And Don went on to be signed to Geffen with a group called Lone Justice.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. John, yeah. Donnie Heffington.
Yeah.
And Don has played on Dylan albums. I mean, Don has played with Emmylou Harris in the Hot Band with Mike friend Steve Fitchell, who plays pedal steel.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I gave Steve some early lessons on technique way back when.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's a producer in Nashville, very successful. Anyway, so Don was there, but Terry says, you know, I'd really like, you mind if I use my drummer, you know, because I just, it was very important. The drumming and the bass was very important to him. And he says, Don, nothing against you, man, but I just want to, I think something is like radar on MASH, you know. He does it before while I'm thinking it.
Uh-huh.
And who was the drummer? Well, Jim Keltner. Jim Keltner, of course, has another, played with everybody.
Another Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, Ringo Starr. Yeah. He played in the Wilbury band with Tom Petty and Dylan and those guys. And interesting, most of the sessions were at night. And even back then, Keltner, sitting back in the booth, you know, the drum booth, dark glasses at midnight.
Oh, man.
And let me go on with this because it's kind of the same same picture here. So we're in the studio, you know, and there's this young blonde surfer chick hanging around. We didn't know. We found out later it was Candace Bergen.
Wow. Really? Oh, what a strange time in history, right?
You know? Yeah.
It's funny that you talk about recording sides, and that was kind of before the album-oriented rock type of stuff. You sold singles, really, is what you did. And now it's kind of come back to the same thing now. Now that it's digital and download, it's all about the single.
It really is, yeah.
And speaking of singles, you want to play your other one, Live Another Day?
Yeah, To Live Another Day.
Yeah, you want to talk about that one?
Sure. I played a benefit for KBBU radio station in Malibu because they got almost completely destroyed in the fire. So there's a place there right across from the Malibu Pier. It's now called Casa Escobar. And a beautiful stage, nice show place. You look out the window and see the Malibu Pier in the ocean. It's just beautiful. And we did a benefit there. And I met a guy named Brooke Halpin, who is a foremost authority on the Beatles. He's written books on it.
Oh, wow.
He has a syndicated radio station on the Beatles called Come Together. And so he said, you know, I'd like to sing some songs. Do you mind backing me up on some songs? He called me up. I said, okay, what do you want to do? So we did Stand By Me, and we did My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it on acoustic, and he sang a song. So we kind of hit it off. So we had lunch over in Malibu, and conversation between tacos was we bringing up people that had gotten cancer and died of cancer and were fighting cancer. And I said, gosh, you know, I mean, you know that person. I know that person. And God, my ex-wife died of a brain cancer, and on and on and on. I said, wow. So anyway, I got to thinking about it. I'm coming over the hill from the ocean toward my home. And popped into my head, I swing my sword at the darkness every day. People wake up, and what do? Well, they start swinging their sword at this freaking disease that's after them. And so by the time I got to almost home, I had the verses basically written, and then I polished them off, got in the car, went back over the hill to Malibu, because he lived over there, and pretty much the song was written. But he said, you know, that word would be better if we did this, and we changed the melody here and that. So basically, we're co-writers on it, you know.
Nice, okay.
And initially, you know, he said, well, why don't we relate this to the cancer thing? And I said, well, hey, it's broader than that. It's substance abuse. It's people with mental diseases. They're all fighting this thing that's out to get them. This enemy wants to take my life. He's a hungry beast with a deadly bite. So you listen to the lyrics in that context, and the song means something to people.
Great. Well, we'll listen to that right now. I've got Colin Kiffin in the studio with me, and here is a song from him called Live Another Day.
You know the fight will rage on.
will rage on.
And that was Colin Kiffin, To Live Another Day. And I have Colin Kiffin in the studio with me today. And Colin, tell me, you got videos for both of these things, right?
Yeah, boy, I'm just a hacker. I'm a hacker. Man, you give me a computer and a DAW digital workstation, or in this case, I was thinking, geez, I sure like to do a video. But I don't want to, I don't look good in a G-string. And I'm not a pole dancer, and I don't dance well, So what am I going to do? So, and I kind of get bored with looking at people staring at the camera, affected expressions and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, well, let's do some eye candy. I play every Sunday morning with a Christian band at a church in Agoura Hills, actually. And the players are great players. A keyboard player is the guy that gets called at Joni Mitchell's birthday party to play. Those kind of players. Tony Campodonico is his name. Anyway, so I'm thinking, well, gee whiz, what am I going to do? And I got a video editing program. And I start jerking around with them and hacking around with the darn thing. And a lot of the Christian music that every week, we play like 5-7 songs sometimes on a service, just with a trio. And a lot of them are Chris Tomlin, who's I love his stuff, but they're all lyric videos. And I'm saying, even with a fixed background, the lyrics popping across the screen, it's really engaging.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to look away. And it's like an accident kind of, so then I thought, well, let's do that. Let's create an accident that people can't look away from. And the first video, To Live Another Day, I found this great time lapse of the Earth rotating from space. And the sun coming up, going down, and the moon coming up, going down.
Oh, cool.
And it was only like maybe 20 seconds or something like that. And I ended up slowing it down and flashing the clips together to make it like 4 minutes.
Right.
And get it the right speed up and down, with the sun coming up, going down, with the tempo kind of the song. And then I did the lyric video over it. And darn if it didn't come out looking pretty impressive. I still look at it and say, God, that's really pretty.
Yeah, it is. And I can't believe that you did the whole thing. You're a renaissance man, hacking through the video program. That's pretty cool. That's good.
Well, it's just mediums. And strangely enough, you learn one and kind of the way you go about things. And the We'll See video, that was another thing. That's the recent single that we released. But once again, I'm looking for something, and I didn't know what to do. And I go through it, and I saw this time lapse, and it was actually, if you look at it, and I maybe shouldn't reveal it, but ever, because it spoils where it is, but actually it's the overhead railway in Tokyo at night.
Wow.
And it's driving really fast. I mean, it's moving fast. And this clip was maybe only 15 seconds or something. I slowed it down 75%, so it was kind of rolling along to the beat of the song. And I dissolve flashed them together once again to get 4 minutes out of the thing. And it is eye candy, and the lyrics are going over the top, and it talks about a journey, and it really worked tremendously well in my mind. I still look at it and say, gosh, that's so beautiful.
I love that feel to your music. It's kind of laid back, and
can I mention something? I have a neighbor that is a multi-platinum record producer, Grammy nominated, and so on and so forth. His name's Louis Bianconcello. And his studio, you have to wear sunglasses when you walk in there because there's so many platinum and gold records on there. I mean, Shawn Mendes, Whitney Houston, all these records he's done,
Wow.
And the guy, it's just like, I'll take a mix over and I'll say, what do you think of this? And he says, I think maybe 2 dB at 150 on the kick, and dip the maybe at about 500, dip at 3 dB on the bass, and your vocal, just kick it maybe at 1.5, maybe just 1 dB. You know, that kind of guy that can just hear it.
Yeah.
You know? And he's given me tremendous insight into just listening, and I thought I was a pretty good listener, but he's on a whole freaking other level. I'm sorry, yeah. I keep saying freaking, but...
That's not on the words that we're not allowed to...
I just get excited. So I wanted to mention him.
Yeah.
He's been such a great mentor and such a great friend.
Oh, good. And we have Colin Kiffin in the studio with us today, and we've been chatting and listening to music, and we're now going to be listening to his music. What do you got coming up?
Kind of an inspirational song.
Would love it.
An epiphany. Yeah, I talk about, there's been a lot of people have used this metaphor about rolling away the stone. You know, people use it. Some people don't know what it's referenced from.
Right.
It's when the angels rolled away the stone of Christ's burial place, and I'm not saying that this goes that direction, but I kind of get this feeling, you know, and I'm using it as a metaphor.
Gotcha.
Take me home.
And wow, we're coming up on the top of the hour. We've had quite a conversation and some great music. Thank you for coming in and sit in with me.
Well, John, it was a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. And we got to maybe play some music sometime, you and I.
Yeah, that would be fun. I would love to do that, although I don't play as well as you do.
I don't play as well as I do.
Oh, no, okay. I'm just kidding. And I think that'll do it for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Listen to my bluebird loud. She can't tell you why.
Programa especial Plus Radio.